Welkom bij Ongehoord, de podcast over seksualiteit in al haar verschijningsvormen. Ik ben Marije Jansen, jullie host, en elke maand ga ik in gesprek met een expert op het gebied van seks en intimiteit. Samen met mijn gasten maak ik dat wat ongehoord is bespreekbaar, omdat meer praten over seks altijd beter is. Welkom bij deze 8e aflevering van Ongehoord. Deze keer praat ik met Jennifer Lyon-Bell. Jennifer en ik gaan way back. Ik geloof dat zij een van de eerste mensen is die ik tegenkwam in mijn eerste schreden op het pornopad. Toen ik nog onderzoek deed naar feministische porno, kwamen wij elkaar tegen in Berlijn bij het allereerste pornfilmfestival. Jennifer is een filmmaker die in haar werk de awkwardness van seks niet schuwt. Haar films zijn prikkelend, erotisch en realistisch. Waar ze over gaan en wat ze allemaal heeft gemaakt, dat hoor je in deze aflevering. En we hebben het over seksuele fantasie. Over hoe je die kan stimuleren, hoe het is om fantasie in beeld te brengen en over hoe onze seksuele fantasie echt niet altijd politiek correct is. Dat dus allemaal in deze aflevering. Verder, zoals iedere keer, wil ik jullie graag verwijzen op onze iTunes. We hebben inmiddels 25 5-sterren recensies en dat is echt super, super, super fijn, want dat zorgt ervoor dat wij zichtbaarder zijn, dat wij beter te vinden zijn. En juist in deze tijden is zichtbaarheid zo belangrijk. Facebook censureert steeds meer seksuele woorden. Tumblr verwijdert alle porno en alle erotica van de website af. Seksualiteit lijkt steeds meer weer in de taboesfeer te verdwijnen. Dus een zichtbaarheid voor een podcast als deze is heel erg belangrijk en waardevol. En daar kunnen jullie aan bijdragen. Dus waardeer je ongehoord, laat dan vooral je 5-sterren rating achter of schrijf een review. Zoals je wellicht weet, hebben we ook een Patreon-pagina. Patreon is een online platform voor creatieve makers. Podcastmakers, filmmakers, schrijvers, bloggers, je vindt ze allemaal. En sinds dus een paar maanden ook ongehoord. We hebben inmiddels 7 mensen die ons ondersteunen via Patreon en dat vind ik echt super awesome. Dankjewel voor jullie steun. Wil je ook iets bijdragen aan Ongehoord? Dan kan dat natuurlijk. Ga naar onze Patreon pagina en steun ons met 5 euro, 2 euro, 10 euro, wat voor jou uitkomt. Met jouw bijdrage kunnen we de komende maanden beter een microfoon kopen, onszelf bekwamen in editen en onze geluidskwaliteit verbeteren. En wie de afgelopen aflevering met Roos heeft gehoord, die weet dat daar best nog wel iets wat beter in kan. Last but not least, in januari 2019 beginnen we met onze nieuwe maandelijkse serie Dicht op de Huid. Deze serie wordt gemaakt omdat ik erin geloof dat iedereen interessante dingen over seksualiteit te vertellen heeft. We hebben er allemaal mee te maken, we lopen er allemaal tegenaan, we hebben positieve ervaringen, we hebben negatieve ervaringen en ik vind het waardevol om elkaars ervaringen te horen. De eerste aflevering is een hele speciale, namelijk met niemand minder dan mijn moeder. Nou praten mijn moeder en ik eigenlijk nooit over seksualiteit, maar ik ben heel benieuwd wat ze te vertellen heeft en ik ben heel benieuwd wat jullie daarvan vinden in januari. Dus luister vooral, half januari, Dicht op de Huid. En heb je zoiets van, ik wil zelf eigenlijk mijn eigen levensverhaal ook wel vertellen, stuur dan vooral een berichtje naar marije@marijejansen.nl. Geen enkel verhaal is te gek, te saai, te whatever. Vaak hebben mensen iets van, ja, maar is mijn verhaal wel interessant? Is het wel boeiend? Ik geloof dat iedereen iets interessants heeft te vertellen over diens eigen ervaringen. Dus schroom niet, klim in de pen en stuur een mailtje als jij deel wil uitmaken van Dicht op de Huid. Voor nu, heel veel plezier met de aflevering met Jennifer Lyon-Bell. Hello, Jennifer.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome in our do-it-yourself podcast studio.
I'm honored to be here.
You told us before that this is your very first podcast.
It is.
Cool.
Yeah.
Are you a podcast listener?
I'd like to say yes, but I haven't really entered that world yet.
So maybe this is an entry into a whole new, world.
Yeah.
Today, we're going to talk about fantasy, we're going to talk about film, and we're going to talk about your work. And I was thinking this morning about how we met, and then I thought, and we were talking about that before as well, that we go rather a long way back.
We do.
Yeah. For me, it kind of feels that we started our, or maybe we both just started our, I don't know, steps into the world of sexuality around the same time.
Yeah.
Because when did we meet, like consciously meet the first time?
So we were both at the same film festival, Porn Film Festival Berlin in 2006, but I don't think we spoke.
We didn't speak?
No.
Oh, but did you?
I think we saw each other, but we didn't actually
You didn't
talk.
Come to our presentation that we did?
because, okay, maybe this is the rent. I think then we said hi, and we were in the same apartment building. I don't know if this is interesting for the listeners. This is just us again talking about the past. So, and that was in 2006. So
and I heard you give a presentation. You were awesome.
Yes. So I was talking about feminist pornography at that time, and I think online pornography, and you were promoting your first film.
Yeah.
And what was your first film? Headshot.
Yeah. So my first film was Headshot, and it's a super simple movie, as you might remember. It's only 8.5 minutes long, but I still really love it. It's kind of inspired by Andy Warhol's film Blowjob from 1964. And Blowjob is an amazing movie, but it's amazing in part because your connection with the lead performer is Andy Warhol has found ways to kind of push you away, like bring you closer, but push you away a lot. So your empathy with him, you're struggling to find empathy with him. At least that's how I experienced the movie. And I thought, ooh, it'd be really interesting to do a very similar movie where we see a young good-looking guy in a leather jacket in a chair against a brick wall getting a blowjob, but to try and find ways through film to bring that empathy back in. And so I cast an actor and an actress, and I did it on the basis of them looking at photographs of each other, but they had never met in person, and then I kept them apart before the moment of the shoot. So when they meet each other for the first time in the movie, they're really meeting each other for the first time. And yeah, then I tried to use like their conversation in this very brief time and a brief conversation with him before she walks in the door, and then using camera movement and intercutting to create a bond between you and him. Because since he's the only one in frame, for me it's a really interesting experiment with how do you relate to the guy who's having this experience. So are you looking at him as a sexual object? Are you feeling like you are him at times? Do those things work together? And does that, in a way, depend on your own sexual orientation? So now I've shown that at a lot of different places and a lot of different audiences, and it's been really fun to hear what people think, because what I've learned is that empathy does transcend gender and it does transcend sexual orientation. There are things going on when you watch something erotic that are much more complex than any of that, and maybe in a way much more universal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do you still show it?
I do. Yeah. Actually, it was on... recently on the Dutch television program Zomergasten.
Oh, yeah.
And it ran for 500,000 people at 8:30 in the evening. I actually couldn't even believe it because, that's so Dutch, I think, to dare to do that. But Simone van Saarloos, the philosopher, wanted to show it. And, yeah, it was an honor to have it shown there. Mm. But, yeah, I show it at film festivals, special events, occasionally on stuff like the Zomergasten thing. And I'm always really eager to hear what people think about it.
It's still one of my favorites. I've seen it so many times, but it's still one of my favorites. And I'm not saying that to be nice, but it's true. Like I every time, it has been a long time since I've seen it, but I think I've seen it over 10 times, and it's really, it's so intimate.
Yeah.
It's super intimate. And I really, I find it interesting what you say, how you can relate to him or you can relate to her, or, and it doesn't matter. Like it does go beyond gender. It's just really, you can feel this experience, you can feel his emotions, and you can feel it's very fascinating. And it's for me, it's a different erotic experience.
Yeah, I find it really arousing. I think it's an arousing movie, and I'm not sure it's that way for everybody, but I think even if you don't find it arousing for whatever reason, that it's still a very interesting movie. And I also like that for people who like giving blowjobs, it's an impossible shot, because if you're giving a blowjob, you really never get to spend that much time with the face of the person who's having all the pleasure. And, you know, experiencing pleasure on somebody else's face is such a major pleasure. So that's part of, for me, the fun of the movie, too, is that it's bringing you something that you just can't experience in real life because bodies don't work that way.
Yeah, yeah. And what I'm also thinking, because we're going to talk about fantasy today, and for me, there's also, like, you see the face and you know what's happening, but you can build your own fantasy around it. Of course, there's this dynamic, you know, that they don't know each other, but it leaves for me a lot of room for my own fantasy, my own explorations around that. Is that something that you got back from people as well? Or
I do think people read their own fantasy into it. And I have had it happen too that people read their own prejudices into it. Because for some people, it's not hard for me to understand a situation where two people, just on the basis of liking the way each other looks, and knowing that we have friends in common, would be willing to experience this on camera. But for some people, I guess that's really hard to manage. So for some people, they made an assumption that she was a sex worker, and they filled in the blanks, at, for example, saying that she had worn certain things that she doesn't wear at all. And maybe for some people that is a fantasy, you know, it's not just about that they don't have the real life experience of women that are, you know, free in their sexuality in that way. So they filled in the blanks. But yeah, I think I do get reactions from people who have filled in the blanks themselves and made up their own story or situation around it. Yeah, I think that's great.
And so this film was in 2000. When did it come out?
2006. I did it in 2005, but I brought it out in 2006.
Yeah. Since then, you have making a lot of other films. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to ask you the question that I get sometimes as well. Like, what fascinates you about sexuality and making films around sexuality? What is your fascination? Why are you working with this topic for already 12 years?
I think for so many people, a lot of their personal creativity and their identity and their pleasure is sort of brought to a focus with their sexuality. And yet, for so many people, they haven't had the opportunities to express those things, you know, either as just a person who might watch movies and is in sexual relationships, or a person who's in the movies, that working with sexuality in, you know, a creative and focused way where we're really thinking about, like, what is interesting? What do we want to say? What has never been said before? That it's really inspiring for people on a personal level. And I know it's inspiring for me. Like, I get a tremendous amount of creative energy from helping people tap into, yeah, what I think is a source of untapped energy that you can get from going deeper with sexuality and being more honest with yourself and being more honest with other people.
Yeah. And you say it helps you tap into a creative energy.
Mm-hmm.
And how has that been developing since that first film in 2006? How can you see your development, and what have all these reactions from people and all your own discovery, how does that translate to your filmmaking now?
Well, I thought maybe what would happen was that I would become fixed on, like, just doing fiction or just doing documentary. But I find that there's so many kinds of film, and there's so much. I mean, that's the great thing about erotic filmmaking, is there's so much that's not been done. And there are reasons for that. It's hard to get them made, and it's hard to get them distributed. And those are, you know, huge barriers compared to other filmmakers. But if you, compared to what other filmmakers have to deal with, but if you're willing to grapple with that, there's just so much interesting, great work to do. So, you know, it's been fun to work in fiction. It's fun to work in documentary. I just made, I guess, what would be my first really experimental film.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun too. And I feel like they all have different challenges. They're all maybe more customized for certain performers rather than other performers. They each bring out a different creative side of me. But they all still, I think, you can see my perspective in each of them. And part of that is what you said before, like this intimacy. I don't know all of what goes into it, but I know that I really feel gratified when we're getting to something intimate in some way in the sexuality, you know, whether that's because it's a scene between total strangers, like an headshot, or a couple in a relationship, or through the context of a game, which is what this new experimental film Adorn is about. But yeah, that intimacy that can develop between people given the right circumstances, I'm just very, very interested in that.
What I notice with your films, it's about intimacy, but what I also, I think, notice is, and we're going to put up a lot of links. We're going to put up the link to your website where people can find your films. So, if they haven't seen it for themselves, what I find really interesting with your films, that there is a huge part of intimacy. But there's also always a situation where it's kind of, I want to say ongemakkelijk in Dutch, or not.
Yeah.
And it's not like an ongemakkelijk, it doesn't sound very sexy, or like, so is this the right word? But there's this kind of people are struggling with something or they need to move through something to get to this point of intimacy, or maybe the ongemak is also, what's the word for English
awkwardness?
Word? Awkwardness, maybe? Yes, yeah. Awkwardness. One of my favorite words, awkward. That the awkwardness is also a part of the intimacy. And I really like how you put something that people might not feel as something that's arousing or sexy, and maybe it isn't sexy for everyone, that is part of sexuality or part of eroticism.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm really happy that you see that, because I couldn't feel more positive about including awkwardness for multiple reasons. I mean, one is, yeah, in a very literal sense, like, I want to see somebody struggle to take their socks off as they struggle to keep a sex scene going. Like, I think that's really interesting and realistic, and it demystifies, like, this idea that sex is supposed to be some magical dance that looks perfect at every second, and if there's one moment of, you know, awkwardness, you've somehow wrecked it. So just from a kind of personal political perspective, I really like that. But I also think that the challenge of porn, actually, you know what, in Headshot, the lead actor, Chris, said it perfectly. He says in the movie, he says, I don't know what's going to happen. And then he says, well, you know what's going to happen. You just don't know how it's going to happen. And I thought, yeah, that is exactly the challenge of good erotic film or good porn, is that, yeah, we all kind of know what's going to happen. Orgasms are probably going to be had, but we don't know how it's going to play out. And I think that the awkwardness is about the real life complicated way that we get from, you know, point A to point B, from, you know, not being in a sexual situation to being in a sexual situation, and showing that journey, you know, having to have a funny conversation or having to take a risk with somebody where you have to ask them something and there's the chance that they say no, that is what kind of brings the story back into sex in a way. So it's both very believable, but it's also, you know, provides this, what I think humans are made to appreciate narrative. Like, we want to be led into a story and not be sure what's going to happen next. And I think that embracing the awkward helps do exactly that. Yeah. And I don't know. I think there's just a real beauty in watching people in an unguarded moment. And it's only when you go through some discomfort that you can get these, like, very strange, unguarded moments that are full of change.
Mm.
And sometimes I don't, to be honest, don't even know where it's coming from. Like in Silver Shoes, my movie, which has three stories in it, there's a story between a man and a woman. And the story is that she assumes that he's gay and she relates to him as a gay man. She's very comfortable, and then finds out at the last moment, and she's very attracted to him, but she figures, like, hey, it's never going to happen. He's gay. And then at the last moment, she realizes that she's made a series of misunderstandings and that she assumed something that wasn't the case, and he actually is interested in her.
Mm-hmm.
And her moment of mortification at realizing this and kind of processing all the things that she must have said and how they must have been taken, it was so important to me. And I think even the people on the set were like, what is Jen going for here? Like, you know, because there was something very specific that I wanted to see. I wanted to see the lead female character just disarmed, like just at sea for a minute as she has to re-navigate everything and also navigate her relationship with this person who she might have offended by making assumptions about him. And I feel so lucky that in the end I was working with Leandra Dahl. She was the lead actress and she was amazing and she did a bunch of great takes, but the take that we ended up using in the movie was just spectacular, because you really feel the world dropping away from her for a second and all of these things changing. And for me, that's, yeah, it's interesting and it's also exciting.
Mm. And you were talking and I was thinking about the topic of today, like also about fantasy. And for me, the awkwardness and the things you are describing, for me, have a huge sense of realness. Like, for me, it taps into a realness. Like, yes, sex can be awkward and you can have these misunderstandings, and I can really relate to what you're saying, that sometimes you have to go through this awkwardness or this, I don't know, uncomfortableness to get to a different place that you might not get when it all goes smooth. How does this tie into with fantasy? Is it for you, these films you are making, are they based on a fantasy, or does it weave, like, what is fantasy, what is realness, of course, but in a way, that's what's going on in my head.
Yeah, that's a fair question, because I kind of thought, because I love reality so much, and this particular take on reality is so much missing from a lot of erotic material, I thought, okay, I'm going to end up in a very documentary space, like just making erotic documentaries. And things like Headshot, which, like, I never really know if I should call Headshot a documentary, because it is.
Yeah.
And yet it's not.
It's not, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I thought that I would, yeah, end up in that space. But I guess what I discovered is that, no, I have fantasies. I mean, maybe what's fair to say is that I'm stepping outwards from more realistic fantasies. So, for example, the situation with the guy that you think is gay but turns out not to be gay, and you have a very certain relationship with him because you've been dealing with him as a gay man for an entire afternoon. That was a fantasy of mine, as well as a real life experience. So I wrote that in advance and I planned that. And in the case of Matinee, like the idea of being in a theater performance with somebody and making a choice with them to
Matinee is another film, right?
Yeah, Matinee is another film that I made, a fiction movie, about, two people who are an actor and actress in a theater, and they're struggling with their on stage relationship, and as a tool to do that, they decide to improvise a love scene, and they end up having real sex on stage. And both of these were, they're actual fantasies of mine, but they are very much based in actual experiences that I've had, and maybe just taking them one step further. But having said that, like, it's really easy to imagine, it happens all the time, that, you know, I look at other people's fantasies as portrayed in movies or porn films and whatever, and I think, wow, my version of this would be really, really different, but I could totally take this on as a fantasy.
Yeah.
You know, earlier years ago, I met somebody who wanted to do like a sci-fi thing. I would love to do a sci-fi porn, but my sci-fi porn is going to be really different than somebody else's, you know. And in fact, I might have a little something in the works on that one. But
on a sci-fi,
I met somebody who's really into special effects, and I thought, wow, this could be an interesting collaboration. So, but the point is more that I think that all kinds of fantasies would be possible, but they're all going to end up blended with this sort of high realism that I also really enjoy, because something that's seamless and glamorous and smooth is just never going to be me.
No.
And that's not what I can bring to the party, you know, as a filmmaker. That realism is for whatever reason the thing that I love and am good at. So I'm just gratified to see that it's not limited to documentary. You can bring that into anything.
In any shape.
Yeah, and the good news is, like, both from sort of a feminist standpoint, but also from a creative standpoint, I think real people are full of amazing ideas about their own sexuality. So it worked great for me to be able to work more collaboratively with the performers that I'd like to work with and say to them, like, I'm having an idea of what I would like to do. Let me share my ideas with you. Why don't you tell me? Maybe there's something you'd like to say about your own sexuality or fantasy you have, and maybe let's find a common ground in between. And maybe that's true a little bit for Adorn, even the experimental one. I had an idea of a game I wanted to play, but then I wanted to work with these performers, and the game that we ended up doing was not the original game that I had come to them with. It was a revised game that I thought would be a better match for all three of us, you know. And I'm thrilled with how that turned out in Adorn. But that's because I think I try to have the kind of relationships with performers where they can be honest with me about what they would
so it's not
like
to you
explore
come up
themselves
with a story and you say, like, okay, this is what's gonna happen and I want you to do this and this. It's really a collaborative experience.
And that's both because, I mean, I like the idea of that sort of from a feminist standpoint, but also for me personally, I find it much easier to get excited by other people's ideas, particularly if it's coming, like, from their heart about stuff that, or their loins of stuff they really want to say, than it is to impress them with something else. Like, I'd rather, for me, it's more fun to come from a collaborative standpoint. And maybe that's not for everybody. I've been lucky to cast performers who were really psyched for that.
Yeah.
And some performers I know would rather be given a full situation and told what to do. And maybe I could do that too, but I really like the way this has been working.
Nice. And you were talking about that some of your films are based on your fantasies.
Mm-hmm.
Has that been a driving force? Like, okay, I have these fantasies, I want to see them in film. Or how does that work for you with using your fantasies in this way? And also making them public in a way.
Yeah, which I will say is fairly mortifying.
Yeah,
like, you know. Particularly because in the process of making a film, you have to tell hundreds of people about your movie and what it's going to be. And it's basically just explaining your innermost things over and over again to people. And the first time I wrote something, a fiction piece based on my fantasy, was Matinee, about the two theater professionals who decide to go all the way on stage. And when I was writing it, I actually had to stop every once in a while and flap my hands, because even being alone in my own living room, the process was so intense, like my mortification was so intense, that I felt I had to like leech a little bit off of it to be able to get through the process. But yeah, it's very, very personal. And sometimes I don't even know for sure why that fantasy is mine. Like, you know, I try to think through things as much as possible before we ever get anywhere near a set. But mm-hmm. I've been surprised even by myself, by how things sometimes attract me, and I can't even express why.
Mm.
Yeah.
But do you need to know why?
No.
Or do you want to know why, maybe?
I think a couple of things. I think that on one hand, like, erotic impulse that you have, I think there's something kind of neat about letting it go uninterrogated and letting it be what it is, and just thinking, like, when it comes from a production standpoint, thinking, you know, what space, what performers, what whatever will bring out the thing that I love, and maybe not interrogating what it is that you love. That sounds really appealing. But I also think two other things. And one is my experience is when you've made a movie, you have to talk about it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I would want to be surprised, like, you know, being on a podcast and suddenly realizing something about myself that I had not realized.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. Now we're talking. Actually, this whole thing is about bloody, bloody, blah.
Well, like a dream. This actually just happened to me this morning. I had a certain dream, and then I was telling my partner about the dream. And then midway through talking about it, I was like, oh, my God, I totally know what this is about. Mm. You know, like, it's a good thing I wasn't in the middle of a podcast while that was happening, you know. But yeah, you kind of want to go through that process in a safer space than in the public eye, I think.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, I think there are filmmakers who, you know, don't challenge their desires, and they just go ahead and put it out there. And, you know, as somebody who is fairly privileged, like as somebody who is, you know, white and has privilege and is, you know, straight seeming, I have a lot of privileges that if I don't interrogate them could end up in a weird place in terms of a film. So, you know, just thinking through what is the message that I'm sending, and is this a message that I believe makes the world a better place and not a worse place when it comes to, you know, when it comes to gender relations or race relations or labor relations or anything else. I kind of owe it to the world to think through stuff a little bit before I start the production process, because the worst thing would be to pour all of this, you know, time and energy into a project and then discover at the end that I was not at one with myself about something. And that I've made a piece that's actually going to do harm in any way. That would really be awful.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I can't prevent that entirely, but that's one reason that I try to talk to a lot of people before I make anything, because I just want to think through, do I really stand behind what I'm saying here? Because I think that, you know, movies live forever.
Yeah.
The movies are going to live longer than me. So I want it to be something that is a force for good and not something frivolous.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're saying that, and I also think about the fantasies that we have that are Not that we need to make all our fantasies into films, of course, but our fantasies that are not PC, not politically correct, or fantasies that that if you make them into a film might be disturbing or might be not politically correct. Because I do feel that we have fantasies that take their own course, that don't care about politics or mm-hmm. I had a conversation recently with students about this, saying, like, do we need to interrogate our fantasies in a way, like, where they're coming from? And should we, in a way, almost maybe censor our own fantasies? Because they were talking about continuing certain power dynamics, for example, or race relations, or stuff that is seemingly misogynist or coming from a patriarchal perspective. Mm-hmm. Like for example, in Kink, where with a classical female submissive, male dominant. And I was really struggling in that conversation, and maybe this is going an entirely different way than what you were talking about, I'm not sure. Because I was struggling in thinking about how much shame people already have about their fantasies. Like you also said, it's such a vulnerable, personal thing, and the way you were writing your scenario for Matinee, and I'm like, ooh, the I can almost feel it. And when I think about my own fantasies and putting those into I don't know, putting them into words or whatever, it's super scary. And for me, I'm also thinking about, like, analyzing your fantasies, maybe analyzing where they're coming from, but also allowing your sexuality to flow freely. Mm-hmm. I don't know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand where you're going, because this is a big concern of feminist porn in general, I think, is that if you see, for example, how the patriarchy works, you can see that a lot of us might have fantasies that feed the patriarchy, mm-hmm. you know? And does that mean that they're wrong, or does it mean that... What does it mean? I think the answer is you can do two things at the same time. Like, it's possible to both interrogate your personal fantasies about, like, consensual non-consent, for example, and think through the political implications and think through where you got these ideas and think through what it means to you purposefully. But then enter a different phase where you enjoy it. Because I also feel like you cannot squash your nature. You know, you can and should be prevented from acting on it. But in terms of what happens inside the privacy of your own head, I don't think that can or should be squashed. So I think it's good to do both. It's good to think about the weight behind that, but I would never tell you don't have that fantasy. Mm. Now, whether or not that's a fantasy that someone should be able to film, and whether that's a fantasy that I would want to film, are two totally different
yes.
questions. Because there's a lot of things that even I experience personally that I would never put to film. I just wouldn't.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the risk to it doing harm in the world would be too much. But I don't censor myself at all in my own mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And so with the films that you made, have you made decisions where you think, like, okay, I'm gonna show this, but I'm gonna leave out other things?
I mean, I will say in Matinee, it was a concern for me that when they decide to go all the way on stage, it depending on how it was directed, because it was going to be a scene with no words, it could look like he was forcing her hand and he was pushing her to go farther than she wanted. And there would be a way to do that would be arousing to
mm-hmm.
me. But I wasn't confident that I would be able to do that in a way that brought out the fantastical element of being dominated on stage like that. And for me, it felt like a better choice to make it clear that it comes from her and find the erotic side in her deciding to take it to a next level, which then makes his character completely different. So in a way, it's almost two different movies, but I really like the movie that it ended up being.
Yeah.
But it did come from a place of thinking, like, do I want to be the one that's going to show a potentially non-consensual act on the part of the guy?
Yeah.
On stage, in front of people, in a situation where they can't discuss what's going on.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about what you said before and what we're talking about before, about you making the decision, I want to put out things that do good to the world. And at the same time, I'm thinking, I can see where you're coming from, that you, like, if you portray certain acts for certain situations, like non-consensual sex, that even though knowing it is a fantasy, for example, even knowing that this film is based on a fantasy, that it can do harm in the world. And on the other hand, I'm thinking about having fantasies that might not be PC and wanting to see them, for example, in a porn film, because what I talk about when I talk about porn, for example, is that I find porn a very safe place to explore fantasies, because you can watch and you can see, okay, how does it look? Actually, that thing that I had in my head, that certain scene in my head, how does it feel when I watch it on a screen and not act it out, for example, in a consensual way? But so I do think that there can be a place within pornography for fantasies that are not politically correct. I don't know how to, and of course there are a lot of films that are about, for example, non-consensual sex scenes that are based on a fact. So I'm struggling with that because,
Well, I agree with you. Yeah. And let me use an example. I was at the Porn Film Festival Berlin and I saw a scene that was about consensual non-consent.
Yeah.
And one tool that a lot of modern, you know, alternative porn and erotic filmmaking uses is combining different film styles in order to present a context which you can choose to ignore or not, but can ground something ethically for people. So this particular film that I saw was a consensual non-consent film, which was between a man and a woman. But first the man, it became clear, was a trans man.
Mm.
So the traditional situation of this scene was already not what one expected. But then, even though that piece was a completely fictionalized piece, they preceded it by a documentary portion where the two performers were not being their characters, but they were just being themselves. And they talked about the implications for what they were doing.
Yeah.
And they acknowledged that this was going to be upsetting for some people, but why they wanted to do it and why it was a big part of their sexual lives together as a real life couple. And then, you know, it cut to the fiction part and then, you know, it just goes completely, you know, crazy with mm-hmm. this consensual non-consent. And I really appreciated that. I think for some people that wouldn't work because that beginning piece would ruin the second piece.
Yeah.
But for me, it actually made it more enjoyable because I didn't have to be worried.
Yeah.
I could, on a number of levels, like both that it was real, or that one of the performers was psychologically in danger, or anything like that. I just felt more at peace. Now, that wasn't the case for the person that I went to the film with. She actually had to leave, and she apologized to me when she left, and I said, please don't apologize. I completely understand. And in a way, I think that's what erotic and porn film festivals are for, is to put you in a safe space where you can start to look at these things yourself. And you can back out if you feel that you're watching something that you would rather not watch. So I totally applaud that she left. But I thought that is a classic way of dealing with this ethical issue, is to include either before the film or after the film, sometimes even during the film, some kind of more documentary element that contextualizes what you're looking at.
Yeah, I agree.
But having said that, that isn't going to work for everybody.
No, that isn't going to work for everyone.
And also, that might be maybe another thing to take into account is, like, that's where, like, for the most part, it used to be that with porn, the directors were less known than the performers. And maybe that's still true. Performers are still really important. But I think that particularly in the alternative porn world, knowing directors' names becomes important because you know what their ethics are. Mm. So you know what you're buying into.
When you know,
if I watch a Light Southern film or a Four Chambers film or an Erica Lust film, I know what those people stand for. Or even a kink.com film. Like, I know what the ethics are of mm-hmm. kink. I know what I agree with and don't agree with what they're doing. And that helps me make decisions about whether I feel like this is okay to watch, like what conditions it was made under, and whether I can stand behind the movie enough to enjoy it at face value.
Yeah, yeah. And going back to your personal experience, steering a little bit away from the ethics, about just having the experience of seeing your own fantasy being played out, being filmed, how does that feel? How does that transform from your head to, in the end, this end result, which is a film that's going to be watched by a lot of people, but also that is your fantasy that, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a miracle that in the end I do have something that I feel like reflects what I went in trying to make, because filmmaking is so hard. There's a lot that happens. There's a lot of people involved. There's a lot of details. There's a lot of, you know, there's hundreds of tiny little decisions that end up affecting the film quite a bit. So I'm just super grateful that for every film so far, what I came out with was what I went in wanting, or maybe even better. But yeah, you have to stay really focused. Like, what is it that I care about? What are the things that I care about? And what are the things I can let go, you know? Like, for the most part, the way that people actually look, like, certainly the size of their body parts, or just, yeah, you know, what color hair they have, or how big their boobs are, these things, I don't care at all. And that's really lucky for me, because if I cared more about that, plus I cared about all the other stuff I cared about, it would make things really difficult from a casting perspective and a production perspective. And fortunately, those aren't the things I care most about. But, you know, you do have to decide, like, in Silver Shoes, the mortification of Leandra when she discovers she's made a mistake. I was like, I'm going to the mat for this. Like, we can't leave until I get this, because this is a central moment for me of this fantasy. And it helps to storyboard it. And if I've storyboarded and I've written down, like, okay, what are the shots? I can feel like, okay, that one, that is, you know, it might not be about visually what we're seeing exactly, but that moment, what's being said in that moment, what we're seeing in that moment, that is key for me. So I really have to stay focused on, and that's filmmaking, I guess. Like, on one hand, you have a thing or a set of things that you want because it reflects your fantasy and what you want to say and what you want to feel and what you want the audience to feel. And on the other hand, you have to be flexible, because nothing ever goes the way that you meant. You can plan and plan and plan, but something weird will happen on the day of the shoot, and you have to be cool and roll with it, or you'll never get anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And has filmmaking changed your fantasy life, or changed the way you think about your fantasies, or the way you experience your fantasies?
I think I have a richer fantasy life now that I'm making films. Because now I know how to take things farther. Like, I might start with a fantasy and think, like, you know, if I put this in a different scenario, I mean, these are tools that I use. I teach an erotic filmmaking workshop, and these are tools that I specifically give to the participants, but, like, yeah, okay, this thing is to say, what if it was in a different space? What's a space that's charged for you? Let's do that. Well, how would that feel? Is that better or worse? You know? So I do that with my own fantasies. You know, what would make it better? Could I put a person from my past in this role? Would that make it better? You know? Yeah. So I have a lot of things. And like I said, I have a lot of fantasies that for one reason or another, I would just not feel good about committing to film, but, yeah, it's helped.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can imagine with some fantasies are just great to be a fantasy. Like, they don't have to be in film, or they don't have to be acted out.
So totally.
You can just have them in your head as your own private entertainment.
Exactly. And I mean, the challenge of film, of course, is that it's an audiovisual medium. There's a lot of things like smells and sensations that if you're a good filmmaker, you can bring that through to the film. But it's really challenging. Mm. So if, like, a certain smell is what's doing it for you, and it's really, really simple, yeah, that's not really going to be filmable. Like, you know, that's something that you can enjoy to the max in your own home.
Yeah.
Or on the bus, or wherever you are in your sexual fantasy.
Yeah.
Because that's just not cinematic.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's not incredibly powerful. Like, it might sound like I'm joking about smells, but I'm dead serious. Like,
No.
Smells
I believe
are a big deal.
Yeah, yes, they are. They are a very big deal. I was thinking something. On the bus, you were saying on the bus smells. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was thinking because you were talking about the sci-fi maybe thing. And there are also fantasies that are so out there that they are like, you cannot even visibly film them or make them like, I don't know. I always come up with a tentacle porn example, but idea. Well, you have tentacle porn, but like fantasies that might be super like fantastical in every sense of the word. And I'm curious how digital technologies or other technologies can open up that realm maybe to make those fantasies filmable or you
know. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of people working in mainstream film, including a lot of people in special effects, who are brimming with ideas already about what they would like to see.
Mm.
So, you know, I'm always excited to meet mainstream film people from film world or advertising world or whatever, in the hopes that, you know, I can interest somebody in collaborating with me, you know, with these skills that otherwise I would never be able to access. But there are other things you can do too, like animation, for example. Like there's a lot of really amazing erotic animation, and you can do things like to evoke, for example, sensation or, you know, some sort of a transhuman experience that, yeah, you just can't do that with physical bodies in time and space.
What are good animations that you have seen that you think like, wow, that really blew my mind?
Oh, I just saw one. I don't know. This is very erotic, but it was also very sad. There's a filmmaker, or excuse me, there's a singer-songwriter called Brendan McLean, mm-hmm. who did this amazing music video called House of Air, which has been at all the film festivals this year. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it.
It's amazing! I'll get it for you. It's a song that to me is about sex. And then it's shot, it's an ode to handkerchief language between gay men.
Mm.
But it's shot on film stock in a very 1970s way with 1970s, early 80s styling. And it's just, it's amazing. So he has another film called Undetectable, which is a reference to HIV. And it's about a relationship between men. And somebody has done an animation. I'm sorry that I don't know the animator's name. But the sexuality and the HIV and the intimacy are all kind of dealt with through this animation and this amazingly beautiful song. And I actually just wrote a note to somebody at Erotic Film Festival and said, please have a look at this music video because I just found it really amazing. But yeah, the parts that are erotic are really erotic, and it's in a way that would be hard to get through using people.
Yeah, yeah. And also what you mentioned about, you said, oh yeah, it's erotic, and it's also sad. And what I really like about your films and also some other filmmakers that are out there is that you include emotions that people also might not think, oh, that's super erotic at first, or
yeah.
Why is this part of a pornography? Or I really love how you and also some films by Four Chambers, for example, they include sadness or other emotions as a part of our sexuality. And I think that's really, I think it's really true to what sexuality can be. It's not like, it can be super horny and arousing withering bodies and whatever. But it can also be a feeling of sadness or melancholy or confusion or, yeah. And I think it's so awesome that you bring that to film.
Oh, that's really nice of you. I have to, that came right to the fore in Silver Shoes again.
Because
in the middle one, The House Sitter, starring Annabelle Lee, it was such an amazing process. Like, can I tell the story of how that happened?
Yes, of course.
So we were shooting on that day, and I explained, like, I wanted it to be not clear if she was the same character who had appeared in the previous vignette. So there's a scene between two women, and then we're in the same space, but Annabelle is styled completely differently. So you're actually not sure if it's supposed to be the same space, and you're not sure if she's actually the same redheaded woman or a different redheaded woman. But I wanted it to be clear that she had some kind of an emotional connection to the person who owned the place. And she was going to fondle the men's clothes in this closet and then masturbate. And the idea would be, if you believe that it is the same space and the same people, that it's a woman's men's clothes that she is caressing. And if you don't believe then that maybe it's a man or an ex-boyfriend or something whose apartment that she is supposed to be house-sitting where this happens. But in any case, it was supposed to be about kind of being in the wake of a breakup and the kind of really intense masturbation that you can have in the wake of a breakup. So we started to film it, and then the plan was just that she would masturbate, but she started getting really teary. And I actually stopped us because I was worried about her. And I rarely stop things, but I said, "I'm so sorry. Like, are you okay?" Mm-hmm. And she said, "Well, to be honest, the person whose jacket this actually is left some cologne on it. And this happens to be cologne of my ex-boyfriend. Mm. So it's kind of taking me to a weird place. Do you mind if I kind of roll with it?" And I was like, "No, I would be honored if you roll with it." So we started again, and she just like went on this full emotional journey where she's sobbing while she's masturbating, which was not, I mean, I knew it was about sadness, but I didn't think we were going to go that deeply into it. But, you know, kudos to her for, you know, being willing to go there. And it looks real because it is real. Mm. But I find it really inspiring because I feel like, you know, that she's going through something really real in that moment, that I don't think that any of us would have been good enough to fake, you know?
Yeah.
But the reaction that I've gotten, I mean, for some people, I won't lie, I think some people look at it and they're like, "Why is somebody crying during sex? This seems strange to me." But many more people say, "Wow, this is like something that I've experienced, or, you know, I've seen before, and I've never seen it on film."
Yeah.
And to me, it's a familiar feeling, like dealing with your own sexuality after you've been sharing your sexuality with somebody else for so long, and then you've lost them for whatever reason. You know, it is powerful.
Yeah.
And it isn't entirely negative. Like, it's a really interesting mixed bag. And I really liked it. You know, me and Annabelle really liked it. We've had so many positive comments from people about it. And Annie Sprinkle said that she loves the movie. Mm. So I was like, well, if Annie Sprinkle likes it, then my job here is done.
Yeah, I really like that scene. And it also, it makes me think of, I don't know if you've seen Attrition, the film by Four Chambers. I always show a clip when to the students when I talk about how different porn can look. And it's this scene between two women, female identified people. And it's about going through a breakup or not, it's after a breakup, and one person wants to have this cathartic experience in this intimate kink interaction she's having with the other person that is not her partner, but somebody, a friend of hers. And there's also, there's so much space for these emotions that I also see in the scene that you shot, that we don't see. And it's always interesting to hear. So she's crying, and there is, it's super, it's really, intense in their emotions. You don't even see them, but you can feel them in how it's shot. And it's always interesting to hear the reactions afterwards. And for a lot of people, it's about, wait, oh, this is part of my sexuality. And finally, I see this shown. And that's what I love about erotic film and about pornography, is that it can make space for recognition in that way, and seeing, and not just bodies or identities, but also these emotions that we think are not part of our sexuality, yeah, but that actually are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it can be something you're actively aroused by, or it can be something that you just think, wow, am I allowed to do that? Am I allowed to cry in the middle of it? Am I allowed to, you know, be angry while having sex? Yeah. All allowed. Like, you know, with the consent of your partner, of course, but, you know, yeah, those things are all, porn can show you that it's okay.
Mm, yeah. Okay, I want to switch over to the workshop you already mentioned. And that's also one of the reasons that I wanted to talk with you about fantasy and film, is because you do this workshop called From Fantasy to Film.
Yes.
Such an easy bridge. Can you tell me a little bit what you're doing there? Is this for people that are all aiming to be pornographers at some point? What or is it for people who want to explore their fantasies? What happens, and what do you do?
Well, I created this workshop just for everybody, for regular people without any film training whatsoever. And I've gone on now. It's been such a success that I've been able to adapt it for other people. So now I've adapted it for like more experienced filmmakers, either porn filmmakers or mainstream filmmakers. But, you know, at its core, it's about, it's not about the details and the technicalities of making an erotic film. It's about the creative enterprise of deciding, if I was only going to ever make one erotic film, what is the one thing I care most about? And that could be a full-blown fantasy, like a specific storyline. It could be centered around a specific act, like maybe the story itself is not so important, but there's a particular act that you really love. Maybe you haven't seen it represented before, or not represented well, or not represented the way you do it or the way you would like to see it. It could be like a style, like a 1920s style, or a some sort of lush jungle thing, or there might be, yeah, some sort of style that really appeals to you, or a kind of relationship between people, even if the story itself is not so important. Like maybe there's, yeah, some particular kind of relationship that you, yeah, that you're devoted to wanting to see. And so what we do is we, you know, I really believe that by getting in touch with your one thing, your one favorite idea, that you're going to learn something about yourself. You're going to learn something about the way you see the world. You're going to learn something about the way you see sexuality, and you're going to add to your fantasy life, because you're going to, you know, for most of us, we just don't take the time to sit and just for ourselves, like without your partner there, like really like sit there and have sexual fantasies and feed those fantasies and watch films and just be given the permission to apply the things you're seeing to your own fantasy life in creative ways to see if you can come up with some third thing that you really love. You know, nobody takes an afternoon and just does that, because that's not a thing.
Yeah.
But in my workshop, it's a thing. Like, we are coming and we are devoting the afternoon to ourselves. And I've been really lucky. It's incredibly important to me that the participants in the group treat each other with total respect and support. And, you know, I talk about how we can do that for each other, and I monitor it really closely. But we've been just so lucky with the incredible support that people give each other, because people want to help other people, like, you know, express themselves creatively. And people have great ideas. So I come with a lot of exercises and ideas and films that we can look at together. And I also bring like an additional hard drive of things that I'm not planning to show, but if somebody has a specific interest, then I can say, oh, well, maybe take a look at this movie and see if it inspires anything for you. But the participants themselves are full of wonderful ideas. So it's, you know, it's primarily a creative development workshop about you as a person and you and your sexuality. But as a side bonus, you get to walk away at the end of the afternoon with a storyboard.
Yeah.
That actually shows, like, I mean, you could hand this to a team of professionals and they would make your film.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you know, for the more, when I do it for like at the Film Academy or, you know, at more film-specific institutions, we can get more into details about how to make certain things happen.
Yeah.
You know, if people want to happen, somebody said, like, well, it's important that they have simultaneous orgasms. And then we could talk about, okay, what does that mean from a filmic perspective? What are the challenges from a production perspective in making that happen? And, you know, just so everybody knows what's at stake for different kinds of sexual things that you might want to show, that if you work in mainstream film, you never would have come up against.
Yeah.
And we can talk, you know, more about details of like how to handle sex scenes ethically and how to make performers feel comfortable. But mainly when I'm teaching for just everyday people, it's more about you and what you want and me helping you kind of bring your ideas to life.
And do people know what they want when they enter your workshop? Do a lot of people have already like a very detailed fantasy and say like, okay, this is what I want to do? Or do people come up like, yeah, I don't know?
We get everything. And yeah, I would say in every workshop, it's quite a range.
Mm-hmm.
Like no matter, you know, whether it's a mixed gender workshop or a women only workshop, you know, if it's people with zero film experience or tons of film experience, I would say there's always a range between people who have virtual no idea of what they would like to express through to maybe one person who has a lot of ideas about what they want to express. And for them, it's more a matter of focusing and winnowing stuff away and not overwhelming themselves. But I really like the first people. I mean, both are fun, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it's possible to do it all in one workshop because they inspire each other in a way. But yeah, we get a lot of people who really have no idea or only, you know, it's totally fair. Like, you know, if you have a sex life that you're not happy with or a sex life that you're happy with. Sometimes, and you don't watch porn, sometimes you don't even know what the possibilities are. Mm. So I think that what I do is I start with just showing a lot of clips of a lot of different kinds of porn and erotic films. And I think for people who don't come in with a lot of ideas, that's very inspiring because they might see something they really like. Or if they don't see something they like, they can say, you know what? This part of this I liked and this part of this, what if I put those together with this thing that I really like that me and my boyfriend do? And then, yeah, then you have the start of a movie. So I think that the clips of other filmmakers gets the process started. But I also think that people remember stuff in the workshop that they haven't thought about for years.
Because they have the chance to focus on their fantasy and have the space to explore that.
Yeah. Like stuff they did in past relationships they'd forgotten about, stuff that aroused them when they were, you know, young people that they had forgotten about, and stuff that they had tried to squish down and squish away. Mm. And now that they're in a safe space and they can afford to look at it, you know, kinks that people pretended they didn't have, and now they're ready to, you know, in this context, they're ready to look at it. And I've had a number of people who discovered kinks that they didn't know. Like, they were a lot
within the workshop.
In the workshop, and I watched it happen. And I suppose there's always the risk that somebody could discover a fantasy that's so intense and complicated that I wouldn't be able to handle it, but that has not happened, you know. Everything that people have discovered has been within the range of my experience as a sexual person and as a sexual filmmaker who has seen a lot of movies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I can create that safe space for people to go ahead and let it come up. So it's very satisfying for me,
I can imagine, yes.
And we've also had it happen. I mean, I expect that people kind of come alone and leave alone, but it's happened that people have decided to get together and make the films. So that sometimes happens.
It can be. I can imagine that for some people it might be a bit like, whoa, they discover something that they didn't know was their fantasy, maybe, in your workshop. Wow, yeah.
And it's, you know, once somebody asked me recently, how can in one afternoon, how can you put people in touch with their fantasies? And I realized in that moment, it's because it's only the start. Like, I consider my job done if I've given you enough to get a storyboard filled out that you feel good about, but I'm pretty sure that nobody walks out and thinks, well, that's done. I'll never think about that again. Like people, I know people come back to me and say, you know, we talk about what you are and aren't allowed to share with partners and friends about what happened in the workshop because the privacy of people is paramount. But within those limitations, people totally, they talk to their friends, they talk to their partners, they explore stuff, they go out and see more porn and erotic films. Like whole parts of pop culture are open to them that they had never thought about before. So I think the success of the workshop has been in part that it is only the beginning of opening doors for yourself. Mm. So the process just keeps going.
Yeah. 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 That's my experience as well. And I'm coming back to one of my favorite books. I think I've mentioned it already. I know in my blog, maybe tons of times, and maybe also in the podcast, I can't remember, The Erotic Mind by Jack Morin. And his book is, I think, from 10 years ago. And he's a sexologist and a researcher, and he wrote The Erotic Mind. It's rather, I don't know if it's called, it's rather academic and for professionals, but it's very easy to read. And what he brings is a test or inquiry to explore your peak erotic experiences, to discover where your desires lie, where your kinks maybe lie. And I've done that, the inquiry, and it's super interesting. I don't know how it maybe relates to what the exercises you do, but it's like really diving into two or three like peak erotic experience you have and really diving, okay, what at that moment was, what were you smelling, for example, coming back to the smell, but also what were your feelings? How did they maybe change through this experience? Were there things that you might be, that you would label as negative, but that might be arousing for you? Really like taking it apart and really exploring and nitpicking, and it opened up, and I was like, okay, I kind of know my sexuality and know what my interests are. But then I dove in?
Yeah.
And it was like this whole new world opening up. It was so fascinating to see that and really see it in front of you. And I can imagine that people in your workshop have maybe a similar experience, that also writing it down or putting it on paper one way or another is really making it more real. And
And I also encourage people, if they're not a word person, they can draw. So yeah. A lot of the exercises I give, you can write a written response or you can draw stuff, because everybody kind of expresses themselves differently that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, gosh, there aren't that many people who've thought about their sexuality more than I have. And yet I'm constantly surprised. Mm. Like, I see a film, maybe even an idea. There have been ideas that people presented in workshops where I thought, whoa, I have not thought about that. And that is very appealing. But also films that I've seen at erotic film festivals where I thought, I had no idea. Mm. And in some cases, they were things I thought, this is totally not my cup of tea. I'm not going to like this at all from a sexual perspective.
Yeah.
And no one was more surprised than I was to find out that I was wrong, you know? So I think that, for people like you and me, I'm sure we're working on this, like cultivating, like, it's not that you have to turn off the critical part of yourself completely or be completely non-judgmental such that, you know, you end up in a morally problematic space, but trying to suspend your disbelief and your judgment so that you can access other people's, you know, true sexual creativity puts you in a position where you might learn something that you didn't know.
Yeah.
Forever. Like,
yeah.
It's not going to end. It's not like I'll have all this figured out by the time a decade ends, you know.
Yeah.
It's a lifetime.
It is definitely a lifetime. And what I really like with this and what you talk about in this workshop is the playfulness and really seeing our fantasies as a place where we can play in a way and explore, and something that if we allow ourselves, and that I think is for a lot of people, and also sometimes including myself, is really a hard part to really allow myself, like, what if I just go into this without trying not to be judgmental of myself or where this is going, but just really exploring and offering yourself that space and time to do that, that there's this whole world that keeps on opening up, or new worlds opening up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think this is something that you and I share. We're perfectionists in a certain way. Mm. And I think that it can be easy to be, okay, I'm going to work on this one fantasy and I'm going to fine tune it and, you know, drilling down. And focus is good. But I think the benefit also of the fantasy to film workshop is that there's, you know, time to do different versions of things. Like, write down three things that fill this answer. And you know what? Pick your favorite. Those other two, fuck them. We're not doing with that. You know, like, giving yourself the freedom to explore it to a certain level, but then also decide, you know what? That didn't work out.
Yeah.
That's not for me after all.
Yeah.
And that's not a tragedy either. You know, it's good. It's fine to, like, take things halfway down the path and be like, well, I learned something. Like, this doesn't work for me, or I wasn't able to find a way to make it work for me. And you don't have to judge that. You just set it to the side and you move forward with something else. And I think for those of us who can be perfectionist in our creativity, encouraging that kind of freedom with the output is freeing.
Yes. Yes, I can relate to that. Yeah. So for the people who are curious, Jen is going to share an exercise for our patrons, I have to say, on the Patreon page. So if you want to know, have a sneak peek of what's happening in exploring your fantasies or fantasy to film, support us on Patreon. This is a sneaked
do
in,
it.
Support request. But Jen has some amazing stuff to share. So, okay, that's it. And I was also thinking back to the fantasies, is what I also really learned is, for a long time in my own fantasy life, I thought, like, yeah, fantasy is this narrative and then it has an end and a middle and a beginning and it has to be this whole story. And really exploring my fantasies and reading about it and talking, watching porn, is that a fantasy can also just be like one flash. Like, my fantasies many times are just a flash of something, and then it's a flash of this is happening, and a certain flash, oh, that's happening. It's not combined in a story
totally,
or with a build up.
Totally.
It can be just like a couple of seconds, and it's super arousing, and then it's gone, for example. Or it's a repeat of the same thing after in a row, like the same flashes after each other. Yeah.
I mean, we hear that in the workshop a lot. Like, it's a look on somebody's face, or it's a very simple act that's over in a second. I agree completely. Like, a fantasy in the sense of a full story, there's a few people that have that, but for most people, that isn't the form that it takes.
Yeah.
And I do remember one time when somebody came in with a fully formed, they didn't come into the workshop with it, but they left the workshop with this unbelievably complex story. And I thought, wow, that's great. And I hope it doesn't make other people feel like they need to do that. So I emphasize that, you know, as this person was developing their idea that they're all good. Like a fully formed story is great, but also just one sensation or a look on somebody's face or a flash of something is more than enough. It's all good. It's so personal. It's whatever you are. But yeah, taking the pressure off the idea that it needs to be some fully formed thing and you've got to have the casting already worked out in your mind or whatever.
Yeah.
And the location booked. Yeah, that's too much pressure. Too much pressure.
Hey, and what are films that maybe some recent films, you already mentioned some titles that tickled your fantasy, that inspired your fancy as a filmmaker or maybe personally, you feel like, wow, that really did something to me.
That's a good question.
Can I share one of mine?
Yeah.
Because okay. You're thinking that I have to tell you something. What I think my last one, and it's already an older one, is the work by Gala Fanting. Saw... what was the longer one that was shown at Porn Film Festival? Like, I was crying when I was...
The abducting one?
No.
Amber. Oh, I love Amber.
Yes. Okay, we're going to share the link to this film, but...
No, that's seriously one of my favorite movies
Yes,
ever.
And that really... For me, that was bringing a fantasy to life that I didn't even consciously knew that I have. I knew that I... Some parts of this film, it's a BDSM film, it's... it features Gala Fanting herself with a partner. I don't think a romantic partner, but at least a scene partner. And they have this really intense BDSM scene. I think it's 20 minutes. Well, the real time experience was way longer, but it's condensed into these 20 minutes, 25 minutes, I don't know. But for me, that was like really sitting there and like, who got into my mind and brought this to film? Because... Wow, it was so powerful in seeing this and really exploring and noticing parts of my sexual life or sexual desires or fantasy life that I wasn't consciously aware of, but that were hidden somewhere and were brought out by this film.
Okay, yeah. Actually, thinking about BDSM, I can remember a film from, I think it was 2 years ago, that I really liked. And it was an Erica Lust film that I think is called Feminist Submissive, but it stars Lena Bembe and Owen Gray.
Oh, I haven't seen that one yet.
You totally have to see that.
I think you recommended it. Yes.
So, I mean, it's incredibly simple. So again, it's not really a story. It's literally Owen Gray and Lena Bembe and a bed. That's basically it. But what I liked about it is that her submission is so complete, and yet he... is not a dominant of the kind that you see represented in the media a lot. Like, he's not bossy.
Mm.
He's very soft and suggestive. And he has a voice that's just not what I would expect. Like, he doesn't sound gruff. He just sounds like a regular guy.
Mm.
And so he's dominating, but not in a bossy way. And that is really interesting for the scene. So, it just made me feel the DS vibe in a different way because of their personalities.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, kink and BDSM is a whole realm of fantasy in itself.
Now I'm trying to think of that I've seen that I love. You know, I like gay porn. I don't watch a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
But we were talking earlier about Colby Keller. I love me some Colby Keller.
I know that you do, yeah.
And, you know, to the extent that I have, like, a favorite type personally when it comes to guys, he's a very well-muscled, big guy covered in blonde body hair. Would that be on my list? I don't know, actually. But he's so present. He does a lot of things, like, in nature. He has his own video series that he made some time back called Colby Keller Does America?
Yeah, I think so.
Which is really interesting. It's a series of experiences that he has all across America with other gay men. But I've also seen him in other people's movies, and I frankly just can't get enough of him.
Mm.
Yeah. So I will watch any gay porn featuring
Colby Keller. Yeah. Have you seen, it's not porn, but it's this web series. It's now on HBO, High Maintenance.
Yes.
He's also in,
and
he's really nice.
Oh, you're killing me.
Okay, we need to look that up after.
I'm giving you credit because you're the one who told me about High Maintenance. And the first season of High Maintenance is like my favorite first season of television ever.
It is amazing.
It's amazing. Yeah. Like some of the best filmmaking I've ever seen is on that show.
Yeah. So this is a web series. It didn't start out on HBO. I think it was somewhere independent. And it's about this, the guy he's called, and he delivers pot, weed, hash, I don't know, throughout New York. And every, I think it's like 10 to 20 minute episodes. And every time you see different people featured where he visits. And it's mostly about the people, and he's kind of the person, he's there everywhere. And I think in the second season or the third season, Colby Keller is also.
Oh my God. Yeah. I can't even, that's too much. I'm just, if anybody out there works for High Maintenance, please, oh Lord, find me a role, however tiny. Yeah. I would do anything. Let me write something. I will do anything to be involved with this show because it is masterful.
It is really good.
Yeah.
Okay. It's time to wrap this up. Jen, what is happening in your near future that people need to know?
Well, we are launching a new website for Blue Artichoke Films, which I'm super excited about because it was always possible to watch my film streaming on other people's sites. But now that you can just come to us, and we're going to have I have a blog where I've written all these nice pieces, and I'm trying to create a sense of community for, like, I don't know, people like us, like people who just are interested in sexuality. And yes, you want to watch some erotic films and porn, but you also just want to know more about it and get to know everybody in this world better. So that's what the new Blue Artichoke Film site is about. And then for the films that are my films, you can look at them streaming if you like to do that. Or you can download them. Or if you still have a DVD player, you can also have DVDs because...
You like the old school?
So I embrace the old school as well as the new school. So I'm really excited about it.
And when is this going to happen? When is your new site online?
That is going to be at the end of December.
End of December.
Yeah.
And, of course, I knew that this was happening. So I asked Jen, the people who are listening to the podcast, can they get some extra thing if they want to see your film?
Absolutely. Sure. Why not?
To celebrate the Christmas, the festive December Christmas. Oh, well, it's actually the day after Christmas, but that's maybe one of the times you can use some porn or erotic film to lift the spirits. If you had maybe your spirits are already lifted, but maybe they need some more lifting. If they want to see your film, is there maybe a code they can use?
Yes. So so for any of the films, and the combo packs of films, even, if you want to get 20% off, you could just put in the code ONGEHORD18. And I can make that happen for you.
Cool.
I don't know if you guys have seen my films before, whether this is the first time. We have two very special new films. One is brand new, hot off the presses. So when the website launches, it will be the first time it's publicly available. And that's Adorn. That's the experimental film, which starts out with the performers naked and they end up clothed and having sex. Stars Sadie Loon and Parker Marks.
Sadie!
And Parker, who is also divine. You would not believe how much chemistry these people have. It's unreal.
So many people talk about Parker Marks, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I still haven't seen hardly anything with Parker in it. So I'm in it for Sadie, but I haven't seen it yet, but I want to see it. But I'm also very curious about Parker because everybody's raving.
They really had this amazing chemistry. And people are like, oh, they must have been together before. No, this was the first time they were ever together. So that is brand new and also available for the first time ever on the new website. Is my virtual reality film called Second Date. So I don't know if people are familiar with virtual reality, but those are the films that you can only watch with these headsets on. And so you can buy like a fancier headset, like an Oculus Go, or you can just buy like totally like in the HEMA or, you know, on Amazon or whatever, just a little $10 cardboard thingy that you can stick your phone in. And basically you just press a few buttons and, you know, put the headset on your head and it feels like you're in the room. So that film is called Second Date and it stars Bishop Black and Elna de Winter. Mm-hmm. Also Bishop Black, I'd been dying to work with for ages. Yeah. I'm so glad I finally got to work with him. And before the shoot in Amsterdam, I sent them on a first date, gave them some pocket money and said, you don't even have to tell me what you're going to do, but just go have a date. And the only rule is no touching, no kissing, nothing like that. And then they came back the next day ready to shoot. And then we shot this movie. So, I mean, what you're looking at, awkwardness and all, is what actually happened between them. But it was shot on a houseboat in northern Amsterdam. Gorgeous houseboat owned by a sculptor. And when you put the headset on, you really feel like you're there with them. It's like, it's very unusual. So, you know, because virtual reality is still so new for a lot of people that have seen this movie, like at film festivals, because it hasn't been available elsewhere yet, only at film festivals, it's been their first experience with virtual reality. So awesome. I hope that people will dare to try it, because it's really, I could explain it, but you have to feel it to believe it. Yeah.
So it's Ongehoord 18, and then you get 20% off of all of your
films.
The
films. Yep.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, Jen, thank you so much for this conversation.
You are so welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
And I have to see your films. I've seen some of them, but I'm lacking here.
I'm going to hook you up. I've been very productive lately, so I'll hook you up.
Cool. Okay, I know what to do with this Christmas. With these Christmas days.
Everybody needs something to sneak away for private time during the holiday season. Even if you love your family, you got to get your private time in.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Zo, dat was hem weer. Aflevering 8 van Ongehoord. Ik hoop dat je ervan genoten hebt en ik hoop dat je er de volgende keer weer bij bent. Ongehoord is een onderdeel van Platform voor Seksualiteit. Het platform waar je open en nieuwsgierig kan leren over alles wat met seks en intimiteit te maken heeft. Voor nu wens ik jullie een hele fijne laatste paar dagen van 2018, mocht je dit nog in 2018 luisteren, en een heel erg goed begin van 2019. Dat het volgend jaar maar plezierig, intiem en prikkelend mag zijn. Tot de volgende keer.